Of what we've been working up to. We spent a lot of time talking about the names of the leaders. We've gotten really deep in some parts, really thick weeds, to try to figure out what is the most biblical, accurate, scriptural function of the church leaders. So we've tried to get really thick, and now we're at the practical part of it. We're trying to apply it now, figure out what it all means for us today in the 21st century. So we're looking at trying to apply first century teaching to 21st century practice. And it's difficult. Sometimes it's very hard. And sometimes there's very gray lines that seem blurred. And we may just miss it sometimes. On, yes, that's a teaching, but it's not necessarily practical. Or yes, that's a teaching, and it definitely needs to be in place today. So sometimes those lines are gray. We've got to really have an eye for discernment on identifying those. All right, so what are the primary functions of the church leader? I've got some notes I want to try and cover. Let me ask this question to kind of get our minds working towards this. How should we go about determining the answer? Let's start there. So the question is the question. We want to know, what are the primary responsibilities of our shepherds, elders, bishops, overseers? What are they supposed to be focused on? But that's a huge question. So let's start with the underlying question. What's the criteria? Or how should we go about determining the answer? What information should we look to?
We look to the Word of God.
Okay. More specific though, Joe. Definitely, yeah. That's the only...
The New Testament.
Okay.
Paul talks about pointing out.
Okay. Now, let me qualify what you said. We don't want to ignore the background, though, of the Old Testament role. Because, now, is that directly going to apply? No, not directly, because the church is a new entity, and there's new teaching for the church. But we got to remember that when the New Testament writers gave us the new teaching on how to do church, so to speak, in their minds, they were going off of an Old Testament model. So we don't want to ignore it. We can't just transfer it, but we don't want to ignore it. Now think more specifically. What information do we want to use? Well, let's start with what we've been talking about. The names. Let's start there. Okay, so be thinking in terms of these three names. Overseer and bishop, pastor, shepherd, and elder. Which of those three describes an action? Louder? Overseer describes an action. Any others? Do any others describe an action?
Shepherd.
Shepherd describes an action. Absolutely. What about elder? Does that describe an action? Or is it something else?
It's an action. One who's growing older.
One who's growing older. Okay, that's true. So elder is not so much an action as it is as a description. Okay? So now that's very important because, and that's one of the reasons we spent so much time looking at the names so that we can understand what names are we using and what do those names mean. So when we use the name overseer, we don't use that so much anymore. When we use the name bishop, not so much anymore. We're talking about a specific action that these people are called to do, to be about doing, to have a primary function of. So that's the first place. When we're talking about what are the primary functions of the church leaders, that's the first place to start. It's looking at the names that the New Testament writers, mostly Paul, a little bit of Luke and Acts, used to describe these people. And so that's why we spent all this time on. Now, so what are the names? The overseer and the bishop is one person. Let me clarify and back up and go forward. All three of these names describe the same role, the same person, you might say. So let me clarify that. But overseer bishop is the same name. What is the role of the overseer bishop? And if you need to, take a moment, get in the back of your Bible, dig out that other sheet, that reference sheet that we had that had all those Greek names on it, definitions. That might help you. What's the role of the overseer? So, in other words, if we're casually amongst our business and our fellowship together and the assembly or fellowshipping or Bible class or this or that, and we use the word overseer. What should come to your mind? I mean, obviously you're thinking elder, but more specifically, what does an overseer do? What does the bishop do? By the definition of the name, what does the bishop do?
One who keeps in safe, keeps safe the congregation.
Okay. How is that different from shepherd, though? Wouldn't that be describing a shepherd? Protecting the flock? Isn't that more of the shepherd role? Yeah.
But a lot of this overlaps.
A lot of it overlaps. Okay. And we're going to get to the overlap. You skip one step ahead of me. Yes. This all overlaps. All of it overlaps. 100% overlap. And we're going to get to that in just a second. Turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 1. Let me kind of show you something here, and let's think about it together. 1 Timothy chapter 1. Okay, so while you're turning there, here's what's going on in 1 Timothy, the whole letter. There's some issues going on in Ephesus, church issues. More or less normal stuff. It's not horrible, like Corinthians horrible, but it's concerning. One of the big problems is that it seems an elder or elders, shepherd, pastor, one of those guys, has got himself caught up in not necessarily direct sin, but sin that involved in a relationship in some way with one of the widow ladies. Okay, and that's why he's talking about the widows, and we can get into that more in another study. But so there's some questions going on about this elder, or these elders. And they're kind of getting a little fishy looking. So that's one of the issues that's going on that Timothy, or Paul wants Timothy to be equipped to address. Okay? And you've got to remember, Timothy's a young guy, probably much younger than I, probably early 20s at this time. And he's leading a church. He's helping to start, found, grow a church. So Paul's giving him some directions. Look at verse chapter 1, verse 4. 3 and 4, excuse me. Verse 3 and 4. As I urged you, Paul, to Timothy, as I urged you upon my departure from Macedonia, remain on at Ephesus, so that you may instruct certain men not to teach strange doctrines. So he's reminding them, hey, remember why I sent you there? Nor to pay attention to myths and endless genealogies, which give rise to mere speculation. Rather than, now hang on just a sec. So he's saying, teach against this, so that we can do and be about this. Rather than, here's the positive thing that he wants them to be about. Rather than furthering the administration of God, which is by faith. That's what he wants them to be about, not the other stuff. Okay? So furthering the administration of God. Turn over a page, chapter 3, verse 14 and 15. And I'm going to tie this together, so hang in there with me. Verse 14, chapter 3. I am writing these things to you. So he's wrote a little bit, and what he's written about is how an elder is supposed to conduct himself. I mean, he's given us a list of qualifications, quote-unquote qualifications, but basically he's saying this is the type of guy you want so that there won't be these issues. And he says, I'm writing these things to you, hoping to come to you before long, but just in case I'm delayed, I write so that you will know how one ought to conduct himself in the household of God, which is the church of the God, of the living God, the pillar and support of the truth. Now here's what's really neat. Focus on this. The word household of God, which is the church. Okay? Same word, chapter 1, verse 4. Administration of God. So look back over there. Chapter 1, verse 4. Administration. What's the NIV got there? Chapter 1, verse 4, administration. Anybody got an NIV on? Oh, you don't have it out? That's okay. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Same word, though. The exact same word.
As finding in chapter 1, verse 4, I'm not finding the same word.
No.
At all.
Okay, read verse 4 then.
Verse 4, they should not hold on to myths or endless lists of ancestors. These cause arguments. They are not helping God's plan, which comes by faith.
Plan.
Plan.
Plan. Not a good translation. That's not. Plan. It's talking about the household of God. That's what it's talking about. The household of God. Which, I guess, if you want to think about it in those terms, that is God's plan. The saved, the church. And he defines it in chapter 3, verse 15. The church. Let's not get too far off. We can study that later. But here's the point I want to show you. If we're talking about how to conduct ourselves in God's household, to administrate God's household, you can kind of see that idea. Is a shepherd going to do the administrating of God's household to make sure everybody is working in the same direction? Or is the bishop overseer? Yeah. So you can see then where the bishop overseer title comes in. It wasn't just cooked out of thin air. I mean, it wasn't just thought up. It's directly related to how the church is to function as the household of God that needs to be administrated, that needs to be run effectively and efficiently. Go ahead.
Well, you just ask if the shepherd is going to do that.
It's the same person. It's the same person. It's not a different person. We're trying to understand better the types. That's what we're getting at. Okay? It's the same person. We're not looking at different people. Don't let me lead you off there. Same person. We're just focusing on understanding a little bit better the names and then the application of the names. So you can see then why one of the names of the church leader is overseer. And we looked at the definition. So look at it with me again on your paper. The one you have for tonight. The definition of an overseer or bishop has the idea of exercising oversight, accepting responsibility for someone else, and safeguarding or seeing to something being done correctly. What is the something being done correctly?
Administration.
Yeah, the household of God, making sure the household of God runs well. Now, here's what's really neat. Turn over to Genesis chapter 40. Joe, did I clarify?
Yes.
Okay. Genesis chapter 40. No, 41. Sorry, not 40. 41. It's 41 verse 40. I had it backwards. Genesis chapter 41 verse 40. Now, this is really neat. Different word because it's a different language, okay? Old Testament is mostly Hebrew. So it's a different word. But it's the same idea. Now look at this with me. Chapter 40, verse 41 in Genesis. It says, "You shall be over my house. And according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne will I be greater than you." Pharaoh talking to Joseph. Now, it's kind of neat. All of the people who had, how would we say it? The super wealthy, the rich, the nobles, the kings, anybody who was really high up socially and economically would have an overseer of their house, would have an administrator of their household. Because you got to remember, it wasn't just you, your two kids, your dog, and your cat. It was mom and dad, grandma, grandpa on both sides. It was everybody coming together, living in a community, a big community, which is what we are. And there was an administrator. If you were real wealthy, had a lot of land to look over, lots of land, lots of cattle, lots of people coming and going, things going on, you needed someone to make sure everything was going well. You didn't just want to leave it up to chance. So you have an administrator. God has administrators over his household too. They're called overseers. Does that make sense? How that all ties in together? Okay, so that having been said, we're looking at the primary functions of the church leaders. And then I ask the question, how do we go about determining the answer? What information do we look to? The first information we're going to look to, what are they called? And so just through looking at the names alone, not even looking through the scriptures to see what they were directed to do, we can see a primary function there of what they're supposed to be about. Making sure the household of God is effectively administered, effectively run. Okay? Now, if we stop there, if we just, right there, we cut it off, that gives us a false idea or a poor understanding of what the elders are supposed to be doing. Very poor. Because right there then, we come up with elders who we talked about a few weeks ago who are just in charge of the finances. And they let the preacher do all the pastoral work, all the caring for souls. And so I remember specifically George sharing his experience as a young man, saying that he didn't feel like his elders really cared. They didn't come to him when he left and had these concerns. They just didn't care. That's at least the way that he felt. So when you get a false understanding of what the role of the elder is, that's what happens. And it just kind of seems, in the past couple of generations, that's the way that we've only focused on the overseer bishop role. And we haven't overlapped and integrated the other roles that are in there. So there's role number one, not in order of importance, but one we cover first. To oversee the administration of God's household. Okay, role number two. Any questions about that? Does that kind of make sense? All right, role number two. What would be the second active name?
Shepherd.
Pastor. Shepherd. Okay. How is the shepherd or pastor different from the overseer bishop?
Is that really more specific?
Okay. What do you mean?
It said again, I didn't hear you. The overseer is more of a take the oversight. You know, saying the things are administered or administrative.
Okay.
Where the shepherd pastor is specifically guarding.
Okay. All right.
And then safe and false doctrine.
Okay.
It's a little more specific.
Okay. I can see, in that sense, it would be more specific. Okay. I see what you're saying. How do these overlap? Let's talk about that for just a moment. How do these two functions overlap?
They both involve guidance.
Say it again?
They both involve guidance.
Guidance? Okay, they both involve guidance. Absolutely. The application of wisdom. Definitely.
Would one oversee it and then the other one actually might take action to go do whatever needs to be done? What the people observe, the observers see, the shepherd go out and do it.
Okay.
The shepherd may, that's maybe more of a one-to-one type of deal than the overseer. I mean, the overseer, you're looking at a group.
Yeah. In a lot of cases, yeah. Not necessarily, but in a lot of cases.
Right.
Yeah.
More personal.
Yeah. Yeah, and because usually when you're dealing with pastoral work, it's going to be a one-on-one. Just naturally, it's going to be one-on-one. But that's not solely. For example, here's an example of how that doesn't apply all the time. Next week, the shepherds are going to meet to determine the teaching and preaching themes for next year. That's a definite pastoral activity, feeding the flock. What is the flock going to be fed next year? That involves everybody. So you can see how in that one activity, it's overlapping. They're overseeing the administration of the household of God and at the same time showing pastoral care and concern. Now, how does it overlap? Let me be more specific. When we're talking about an activity or a necessary, can I use necessary evil? That's just tongue-in-cheek figure of speech, okay? Not that it's a bad thing. But when we say these things that have to be done, it's just kind of routine stuff. We've got to do a budget. We've got to keep the budget. We've got to keep an eye on the budget. We just got to be good stewards with our money and determine how and when we're going to spend our money. Now, that being said, how does that overlap so that the same person who's ultimately responsible for overseeing the household of God, which includes God's money, how is that person going to have also a shepherding role with the money? How does that overlap?
Well, we get a lot of requests in terms of, and
well, this is just one example. These things are very good works.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, we at certain times of year, we get all kinds of these things, mm-hmm. as you know. And, you know, just, hey, they are very good works. But in terms of what we do with them, in terms of how they relate to our spiritual growth, in terms of the members,
okay.
we may decide, yeah, that's something we might want to do, or that's something we might want to take down that path.
Okay.
Or we may say, hey, no, we not this time, or
okay.
you know, maybe this
not is comfortable with that.
Not comfortable with that.
Okay. Think about it this way. It's kind of another way of saying what Jim was kind of describing. The church is an organization. And because it's a large group of people with physical resources, it's incumbent that we manage those resources well. I mean, that's just a practical matter of it. However, is the church a nonprofit organization?
Yeah.
Hang on. Is the church, don't think capitalistic and all this economic. Is the church supposed to be run like a nonprofit organization? Is that what God set up?
No.
No. Now, I understand why you answered yes, as opposed to trying to make money. Yeah. Definitely yes. And we're not about making money. Let me rephrase the question. Our group, from an organizational standpoint, we are much more scripturally defined and described as a spiritual group of people, as opposed to a collection or organization of people. The church is much more an organism than it is an organization. And so what we do with our physical resources has every bit of playover or carryover into who we are as a spiritual group of people. So that's why I asked the question, look at the number here. Number two. The idea of an overseer indicates a certain degree of authority. In terms of exercise and oversight, what type of group are they to exercise over? Is it a nonprofit organization, or is it a group, a spiritual group of people bound together by something higher? Yeah, it's the spiritual group of people. So then, those decisions that are made, quote unquote decisions that have to be made, or the guidance that's provided, or the oversight that's given, has to be done with the reference in mind, in the frame of reference, that they're not guiding or leading an organization. They're directing an organism. They're helping to lead an organism. There's a huge difference. And when we remember that everything goes back into our spiritual life, all the physical decisions play back into our spiritual decisions. That you can't separate them. There's just no way to separate them. They all overlap. So in that sense, that's how they overlap. So when we talk about, well, are we going to buy, let me throw something out there. Are we going to expand the parking lot, or are we not? Well, that's a decision that the elders have said, hey, deacons who are in charge of building your grounds, please go investigate and let us know what's best. Tell us what you think is best, because that's what they how they decided to handle it. Because that's what the deacons are for, doing the work of it, the service part of it. But is that a decision that the elders shouldn't be involved in because it's a physical decision? Probably not. Here's why. Because for a few different reasons, and this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, the practical part of it. Because that's going to take up a great deal of the family's resources. Those are resources that we're not going to have available to do with other pastoral works. So it's going to take away from something else. The other part of it is the main reason that we've even started talking about that is because we have a fear of a visitor driving through and driving out if they can't find a parking lot. That's a pastoral concern. So you can see how they play over with one another. Does that mean that the elders need to be out there directing the affairs of it? No, they shouldn't be, because then that's taking their attention away from our souls caring for us. So we can start to see how they kind of play over a little bit. All right, so here, I made a list, and let me just share this with you. We're going to run out of time in just a minute. What are the primary functions of the church leaders? Number one, care for the spiritual well-being of the church. In my opinion, that's the most important priority there is, to care for the spiritual well-being of the church. Both the church meaning me personally, you personally and individually, and then us together collectively, secondary to me personally. Their first and foremost concern is making sure they help me get to heaven. That's it. They're my shepherd. They're the ones who God has left here to help, like we talked about this morning, turn me right side up. They're working for Jesus in that way. Since He's the great shepherd, John chapter 10, they're His workers, watching over my soul. That's their first and foremost priority. Number two, they're ultimately responsible for ensuring that God's family lives as God's family should. And I say God's family, Paul used the word household. The household of God. The administration of God. They're responsible for making sure that we look like God's family. So that when someone who's not part of God's family sees us, they see what God wants them to see. And they don't see something that's polluted or different.
Say that again, please.
We'll yeah. Start. What, the whole thing?
The sentence.
Okay. They're ultimately responsible for ensuring that God's family lives as God's family should. Now, those two functions describe more or less the overseer bishop and the shepherd pastor. Okay? Those two describe it. The elder. Where does that word come in? How does that describe, how does that describe a function of the church leader? Certainly it's a reference to who they are. That's for sure. How else does it fit into this discussion now? And we're going to talk about who they are starting with the next lesson. Dan?
Well, somehow the elders have to have a deference to those in authority. And somehow the idea of elder, sometimes age is just age and experience is why we defer to somebody else, even though they may not really have all the technical knowledge or, you know, all the day-to-day knowledge. But so anyway, the elder is kind of like a authority and why we would...
Built-in credibility.
Yeah, you either take authority or it's given to you. And in the church's case, it's given.
Okay.
And by those governments.
Okay. Someone else raise their hand?
If you go back to Moses, you know, Moses usually gave instructions to the elders. God said, I believe it. You talk to the elders and tell them this. And then they passed it on to everyone else.
So the elders were the ones who were disseminating the information.
And there's several other places in the Old Testament where elders were.
Yeah, but we looked at a bunch of them. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Now, is elder, in terms of the church leader, is it ever used in a singular sense?
No.
Never. Not once. Perfect. It's always plural. Elders. So the function then, from a practical standpoint, they serve as a board. They do. And that's not a word that we're terribly comfortable with sometimes. But the idea of an elder board, a presbytery, which is what that is, that's a scriptural name for it. That is what they are. They are a board of elders. They are a group of elders, a collection of elders. Just like they had in the Old Testament. There was never just one. Just like they have in the New Testament. There was never just one. It always worked as a collection. As almost like, I was going to use the term, Sanhedrin is probably not the most accurate way to think about it, but they were a group, a collection, a presbytery, group of defined people with a defined authority and responsibility. So those are the three functions and how the names fit in. So you can see there's a function of overseeing the household of God from a collective standpoint, making sure we look like God's family should look. There's a primary, I think, more important than that, making sure that I'm on the right track to get to heaven. And they're doing everything they can to watch out for my soul. me personally, and then us all together. And then the third, the function, from a functional standpoint, it's how they do it. They do it collectively as a board, together, working together to make sure that this happens. As best I understand the scriptures, that's how it describes it in the way I've studied it in those ways. That's the best thing that I've come up with. So now, let's look back here at number six. We kind of planned the timing just right. Number six. Are there any other questions that ought to be answered that I haven't, or we together haven't asked? In terms of understanding what our church leaders do. Yes,
I can think of one. When we went to Tulsa and sat in on the session, then one of the elders there at Memorial Drive said, being an elder is different according to different sizes, different communities, and so it's not always the same. And this is my example, not one he gave, but suppose we had a congregation like this, and there's absolutely no one here who had any experience or knowledge of finances, just no one at all. Well, to get the job done, they always just have to take that responsibility because it had to be done. Then hopefully someone would be trained and would get there, but in the meantime, somebody's got to do it because otherwise it would just not happen. Mm-hmm. And so, but what this man said was, the smaller congregation typically see elders as being a little bit more actively involved in what goes on, where the larger congregations probably are more like some of these definitions where it's sort of a setback and just watch so that it's an okay attitude. I can think that would be appropriate.
Usually, I'll add my two cents. Usually, in a smaller congregation, and smaller is usually defined as 50 and under, roughly 50 and under, the resources, the human resources are much more limited.
That's right.
You know what I mean? So if, which is I think pretty rare, but if you have a smaller family, a smaller church, meaning 75 and under, 50 and under, probably you're not going to have elders in the first place. But if you do, which is good, if you do, those are the ones who are the leaders anyways. You know what I mean? In terms of being equipped to teach, to preach, to et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're probably the only ones in a family that size, which I think by default means that it's all on you now. You know, I think, and it's maybe it's not accurately said that it's they're the only ones who are able, they're the only ones willing a lot of times. And that goes back into the circle, which is self-repeating of why it's small in the first place and why it's not growing. You know, so that's part of it. You know, Gene, I'm going to tell you this in answering that or responding to that statement. I think that's dangerous. I think it's very dangerous. I think in a lot of cases, the larger congregations, which we kind of identify as multi-staff, meaning a preacher, a youth minister, an associate or involvement, this and this and this, guys, multiple paid staff members, there's a very dangerous tendency to let them do the shepherding. And then, because on top of that, you're going to have 20, 30, 40 deacons running the affairs. And it's very dangerous for the shepherds to remove themselves so much to the point where something blows up and they're, I didn't know that was going on, you know. So-and-so's cheating on somebody, you know. And then stuff happens and they had no idea.
That's what this man said. Memorial Drive is a large congregation.
Yeah.
I remember Dan, were there six?
Yeah, I think so.
They got 4.5 on average Sunday morning.
Yeah, and there were six elders maybe. Anyway, they divided up their responsibilities. In other words, he said, you kind of watch this budget, you kind of watch the attendance, you kind of watch this, and then we'll all get together and talk about it. But we can't all do it, so we have to segment the responsibility out of this.
Yeah, and that's very common in terms of, you know, an elder will work with a deacon kind of thing. So, okay. Any other questions about this?
In our conversation here, maybe we've kind of blurred the concepts of management and administration. We maybe think of that as one thing, but
Well, Tim and I were talking about this last week. There's actually 10.
Yeah.
You could manage and not administer, and you could administer and not manage.
So right.
So we can blur together. That's an amazing concept about the church not being a non-profit. Paul used that word a lot, profitable, whether something was profitable, and he didn't want to be non-profit, he wanted to be profitable, and actually we deal in a different denomination of capital,
currency, yeah,
so to speak, and no, it's not non-profit at all, and in that
we're very much a for-profit
denomination, denominated in that the capital that we're trying to
souls.
The capital that we're trying to multiply.
I think in terms of what you said, Dan, I think an administrator, and that's what I tried to describe here, is that they're ultimately responsible for ensuring that God's family lives as God's family, looks like God's family. The managers are the deacons and the ministers that are paid.
No,
those are the managers.
No, I don't think the other way, that the deacons are the administrators.
Well, I guess it depends on how you define manager and administrator. I have this idea in my head of a hospital administrator, the main guy who doesn't touch anything.
The title.
So, but I guess it just depends on how you define it.
He's still carrying out policies, though, handed down to him by the hospital board. So
that's true.
I was kind of thinking about like Schultz Lewis and Charlie Sharp. I don't want to be Charlie Sharp, but they actually have those young people living with them. And I don't know how big Schultz Lewis is, but I know Charlie Sharp can find land and have the children work there. But I think he's feeding their souls. Even by working with the land, he's teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I don't think he would continue to grow like he is.
Yeah. I'm sure you're right.
I know he makes a lot of money. He has the dairy and the different things that he sells, but he does actually feed all those people there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's a big, they're making money, but hopefully they're doing it in the correct
putting way. It back into,
right.
Yeah. Mike?
Well, this is just a comment.
Okay.
But in this day and age, because we are in this country, we are legally defined by the government as non-profit, which is kind of what confuses the whole issue.
Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, we have to be legally recognized as an entity by the state of Illinois to, for instance, own this property.
Yeah.
We have the right to go into a contract to build a building or whatever we want to do.
Yeah. Sometimes that blurs our lines.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, when we say we're a non-profit, well, if you go to a lawyer and say, what it,
kind of
a group, we are a non-profit.
Yeah. We're a 503C or whatever.
Yeah, and we have certain regulations on how we conduct business and keep records and things like that.
We're talking about semantic here, okay?
Uh-huh.
The Mormon Church is a non-profit.
Yeah.
For years, next time you take a drink of Pepsi.
Say that one more time.
Next time you take a drink of Pepsi, for a long time, the Mormon Church has been the biggest corporate owner of Pepsi stock.
Is that right?
Huh. Most people don't know that.
No, I didn't.
Well, they religiously keep it secret to what they're
doing. Really non-profit is we talk about business or taxes. It's a tax thing. Is to avoid being taxed by the corporation.
Well, another aspect of that non-profit idea is that you do make money, but all of that is put back into the organization for the betterment of that organization. And it seems to me that that's what we are doing in the church. You know, that contribution that we have up there, that is some money that's coming into the church. And I think all of us expect that to be used for the betterment of the church.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get that money during the contribution time for any one person, the elder or the preacher or whoever, to stick it in their pocket.
Yeah.
And gain from, you know, if I can get more people to give more money, I can put more money in my pocket. Mm-hmm. You're not about that.
It's used for running the affairs of the household. That's what it's for. That's what it's for. Okay, good discussion. Good discussion.
We are out of time, so we'll wrap it up and close with a prayer. Any prayer requests?